What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. Thanks for checking us out. I know you got so many options out there, but I really do appreciate you subscribing and downloading and sharing this show. Guess what? According to Chartable, after a combination of three things, Tony Merkel having me on, Sam Tripoli from Tinfoil Hat having me on, and then the David Icke interview, according to Chartable, this show is number one in the United States and Canada in the government section. Now, I don't pretend to understand how it all works on Chartable. It clearly can't be total number of listeners because we don't have more listeners than InfoWars. I mean, we might have better listeners, but we don't have more listeners. But I'm not arguing with it. I'm grateful, and it is because of you. It's because you're sharing the show. I don't know. People must like hearing about this version of reality from, you know, from the topics that we cover or the people that we bring in here. So I'm flattered by it. It's a great start. Let's see how far we can take this. Let's see if we can get this to be, you know, one of those shows that wakes up all the normies. I feel like most of the listeners here are real educated on these topics. They have a deep understanding, or at least they're beginning to understand. And we're not really reaching in people that are still asleep. Those people are blissfully ignorant, and maybe they'll wake up, maybe they won't. But I wanted to do an episode here, kind of like it as a thank you to the fans because of this, you know, this Chartable thing that has happened. And I encourage a lot of interaction. You know, tell people if you want, if questions or comments or whatever, you can go to theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com and you can reach out there. And I get a lot of questions. And so what I wanted to do with this episode was answer some of the questions that I get. I mean, a lot of them I just reply back to in email form. Some of them I've been compiling over the last couple of weeks because they're really good. And I thought, well, you know what I should do is maybe have a show where all we do is just kind of get into the answers to these questions. And even if it's not your question, I think it'll still probably, you might be interested in hearing, you know, some commentary on it because it's, this will sort of be like a variety pack, you know, of, hopefully you don't get too many of the dark chocolates that nobody likes. Anyway, so let's start with some questions. I'm not going to read them out in terms of like who actually asked them, but we'll just roll with it. Drug legalization in Oregon, good idea or bad one? Well, this is interesting because I am pro-drugs, which sounds fucking crazy when you say it like that. I'm not pro all drugs, but I am pro you having the freedom to do whatever you want with your own body, provided that you're not harming anyone else. Okay, I understand this gets into gray areas when you're talking about things like drinking and driving or being out of your mind and getting behind the... There's obviously limits to this. That's why I say as long as you're not harming anybody else. But if you're in your home and you want to go, you know, get baked out of your mind, who am I to say don't do it? You know, obviously get your work done, be responsible, take care of your kids, you know, prioritize things. But if, you know, if you've got a night alone and you want to party and you've got friends over and you guys all want to get crazy, like, honestly, who's that hurting? Maybe yourself, but that's your choice. I'm all about choice. I'm all about freedoms. I'm all about, you know, giving people the flexibility to do the things that they want to do. If you're not allowed to explore your own consciousness or things like that, then what are we doing here? You know, so drug legalization, good idea or bad one? Well, let's look at Portugal. They legalized drugs there in Portugal. What happened? Drug use went down. Which I think is counterintuitive to the politician or to most people probably. But drug use went down. Overdoses went way down. So that's a good thing. Think of if all drugs were legal in the United States, what would that mean? What would that look like? Well, I mean, if heroin was legalized tomorrow and I could get it wherever I wanted, would I go get it? Probably not. It's not my thing. So I'm not sure if the argument is, well, if it's legal, then it'll be available to everyone. And then all these new people are going to be doing it. Well, maybe some people will, but let's not pretend that people that want heroin can't get it, because they can get it. Apparently, they can get it relatively easily. So is this going to make the, you know, average American rush out to their local 7-Eleven that now sells heroin and just load up on it? I mean, no, that's idiotic. It will have an impact on those that are looking to experiment with it and try it and maybe get themselves in a bad situation with it. But are you going to suddenly wake up and everybody's going to be high? You know, it just doesn't really work that way. Politicians would like you to believe that, of course. I'm in favor of drug legalization, all of them, across the board. Some are really, really awful for you. Like, legal or not legal, I'm not trying crack cocaine either way. Just not. I've never heard any story start off with, well, my life was in the toilet, but then I started smoking crack cocaine and then everything got better. I never hear that story. It might be out there. I mean, it might be Rick James's story, but even, you know, even Richard Pryor lit himself on fire with it. So maybe not the smartest thing in the world to do. But in terms of, look, one thing that would come out of drug legalization would be an end of the war on drugs. And I am most definitely for that. You know, that war that we declared on a thing, on drugs. You know, we went to war against drugs. We got all armed and ready and, you know, it seems like maybe the drugs had the better strategy, because that war on drugs hasn't really turned out very well. Still drugs. Still drugs everywhere. How'd that war on drugs? It looked like it was a war on people. It was really what it was about. Mostly a war on poor people. People that can't afford to defend themselves in court, get a court-appointed attorney that spends on average 7 minutes preparing that person's case for trial. You heard that correctly. 7 minutes. They call it the American pie, public defense, because public defenders have on average the same length that takes the song American Pie to play. 7 minutes. So legalizing drugs would end the war on drugs. That in and of itself is enough of a reason to legalize it. But we've got to start thinking differently about laws and regulations and things. If you were to legalize drugs like Oregon did, look, I get it. You know, I've been to Portland plenty of times. There's a lot of people that are strung out, you know, sitting around begging for money, looking like Antifa mugshot video, you know, compilation pictures and things like, you know, that it's a shitty life. You don't want to be down that. But don't tell me that if drugs were legalized, that would somehow make things much worse. Things are already pretty bad. Legalize it and offer treatment for people. People are getting high because life sucks and life is hard. And maybe you have some demons in your past. Maybe you had a shitty upbringing. There's plenty of reasons why people are going to do drugs. But you know, one reason that doesn't come up for them to not do drugs is that it's illegal. They don't seem to care about that. It's an inconvenience going to jail, and it ruins your life and maybe causes you to lose your job. But fuck, if you're shooting heroin, you're already on that path anyway. So I say legalize it. Offer treatment and education about it. But when you prohibit something like that, it just only makes it more attractive to people. And to legalize it, to demystifies it, you know. And look, I live in Colorado. Marijuana is legal. I can go to the weed store not too far from my house. And I do. And you can buy edibles and you can buy all kinds. It's so much better than in college when I was at USC. We had to go to like Pico and Alvarado. There was like a gas station there, and you would pull up and people would just swarm your car. Yo, what you need? And you're like, I need some weed. And it would be the worst weed you've ever smoked. It was like Mexican shake weed with like sprayed with, you know, Raid or something, you know, something to give it a little kick. And you would smoke it and go, oh, this is terrible. But hey, look, I'm getting high. It's my freshman year in college. Isn't this exciting? It just would be so much better if you could go to the weed store and have it, you know, make sure the quality is high, make sure you're not going to get mugged or, you know, whatever. So that exists now. And of course, the federal drug sentencing laws are, the drug scheduling laws, I should say, are a joke. You know, I mean, they have marijuana as a Schedule I drug, which means it has no medicinal value, while simultaneously having it available in more than half of the states in the country for medical use. I mean, the contradictions are just blatantly obvious. So drug legalization, good or bad? I say good. But I say that understanding that there are also, you know, there's questions and things you need to work out. But check Portugal as an example of a success story with that. All right, let's see. The next one is, does China control Joe Biden? Well, you mean like Russia controlled Trump? I mean, it's, can you see the same sort of narrative being shaped? Does China control Joe Biden? I don't think so. I think China controls Joe Biden as much as Russia controls Donald Trump. I think these are distractions. I think that China is being demonized. I mean, so the left spent 4 years saying Trump is controlled by the Russians, Russian agent, and Rachel Maddow made, you know, a name for herself being a propagandist, talking about how Russia was influencing the elections and all that. Now, what do we have? We have Biden winning, supposedly. I'm going to get to that question later on. And now the right starts saying, well, Biden's controlled by China. Let's be very honest about something here, okay? The elephant in the room. Both of these candidates are controlled by Israel. Okay, that's just the reality of this. You want to argue about Russia, you want to argue about China. You know who they're never arguing about? They're never arguing about the control of AIPAC. They're never speculating about which candidate might be controlled by Tel Aviv. In fairness, they don't need to speculate about it because it's known, and it's both candidates, and it's both sides, and it's everybody in Congress. Ask Dr. Cynthia McKinney. Ask her if she signed the pledge. And what happens when you don't? So the Chinese role with Biden, look, I'm not trying to say that China is without criticism. They're an authoritarian, psychotic regime. Are they trying to take over the world? No, they are not. Not at least militarily, they're not. Are they trying to take over the world financially? Well, they're making moves, you know. Belt and Road Initiative is part of that. They're working to colonize Africa. They're doing it in a different way, of course. So, you know, the media wants tension. They want tension in all aspects of our society. But they want tension militarily with Russia. They want tension militarily with Iran. And they want it with China as well. Now, these are three very dangerous countries to get into any sort of war with. Russia has far better technology than we have. If you recall, there was an incident several years ago that happened in, don't know if it was the Mediterranean or the Red Sea. It was in that region near Saudi Arabia and whatnot, where a U.S. ship, a large U.S. ship, was there and got buzzed by a Russian fighter. And when that Russian fighter buzzed it, it cut all the communications. It knocked out everything on that American ship for a little while. And the Americans didn't know what to do. They were like, uh-oh. They jammed us, you know, with some sort of technology. They didn't do it again. You know, they didn't want to give the U.S. a second chance to get that on radar or video or whatever it did. But you don't want, my point is, research your history of World War II. Let me know if you want to get into a war with Russia. Their soldiers are not to be messed with. They lost, you know, 20 million of them in World War II. They're not interested in hearing our complaints about losing, you know, 500,000. So Russia, China, demonization begins because the military industrial complex runs, you know, works in conjunction with, and in some cases has overlapping ownership of these multinational media conglomerates. And they always want war. So we're going to hear more of Joe Biden is controlled by China. That is, if he actually becomes the president. And don't fall into that. We got into it into the book a little bit in a chapter called The Thucydides Trap, which talks about the rise of a new empire always threatens the existing empire. And in 12 of the 16 times that has happened in our recorded history, it's ended in war. And we don't want that. America is demonizing China for a variety of reasons, but we need each other. So be very careful about that. Joe Biden controlled by the CCP, you know, and all that stuff. Yeah, yeah. Don't read Epoch Times. It's written by the CIA. You know, so you're going to hear a lot more of the demonization of China. And like I said, they are not without their problems. They certainly are. They're rolling out an insane social credit system, and it's not an agenda that you want to participate in. But let's not pretend that China is somehow indiscriminately bombing countries and then offering to spread their ideology in those countries. And, you know, we're doing those things, but China is not. China's building up a massive manufacturing hub. They're moving hundreds of millions of more people into cities over the next 10 years as part of this transition that they're part of. They're growing. They're building. They're growers and builders. We're destroyers. We have a psychotic mindset. So don't fall in the trap of the Biden-China thing. Oh, okay. So then that kind of leads me to, what do I make of the election situation? Oh, it's, you know, it's kind of what I expected. Uncertainty and murkiness. I think that the Democrats tried to steal the election. I think that. Motive, opportunity. What is the motive? Well, the motive is they were desperate for the last 4 years. They got embarrassed by Donald Trump. Their control of the media waned in the last 4 years as Trump rightly exposed them as being fake news, which they are. He humiliated them on a variety of levels. He made a mockery of Nancy Pelosi and her insanity. And they felt it was do or die for them. They had to win this election. Now, if you had a brain that functions, what you would have done in the 4 years in which Donald Trump was ruining their lives would be to put out an actual candidate that was had, you know, enthusiasm around them, had a had an interesting policy take. It was somebody that you could get behind, you know, somebody that packed crowds, somebody that got people excited to come out and vote, to be a part of this. And they selected Joe Biden instead, who does none of those things. The most important election in their lifetime, the Democrats' lifetime. And they selected the candidate with no enthusiasm, a guy who is, by all accounts, on a downward slide from a mental capacity, not trying to be a dick, just trying to be observant. The guy can't string sentences together. He's in decline. It's a fact. You get a guy with a bad reputation as a pedophile. He's known to be a pedophile. I mean, let's stop parading around that Joe Biden is some, you know, disciple of Obama, and he's the second, you know, he's going to bring back dignity to the White House. He's not doing any of those things. He's a pedophile in the highest position in office. And for the record, a lot of them have been. A lot of people that have been presidents of the United States are also pedophiles. Sorry. hate to rain on your parade, but there's a reason for that. It's because they're controllable. And if you look at Joe Biden, there is one word that comes to mind: controllable. That guy is an empty suit. He'll be whoever you want him to be. Whoever gives him the money, whoever puts him in positions of power, you tell him what you need him to do, and he'll do it. So, but they can't win with Joe Biden. You can't win with him. It doesn't pass the eyeball test. Look at the Trump rallies. And once again, I feel like I've said this a million times, but if you're a new listener to the show, I just want to reiterate, I'm not on the Trump team. I'm not on the Biden team. I don't like either one of these groups. They're both criminals. It's just a different flavor of tyranny. So when I'm critical of Biden, please don't assume that that means I'm a Trump supporter. And when I'm critical of Trump, please don't assume that I'm on the left. I don't like either of them. So, but Trump was selling out. He was selling out stadiums, you know, I mean, he was selling out venues, even during this pandemic, air quotes. People showed up for Donald Trump. Say what you will about him. That guy knows how to get people on board with his way of thinking. I think he's insane. I think he is a narcissist with severe psychological problems. I've always thought that. I'm not even talking about his policy. I'm just talking about his personality. He's a narcissistic personality. I hate those guys. But look, credit where credit is due. The guy knows how to pack crowds. And there were millions of people that turned out for him. There were dozens of people that turned out for Biden. And you expect me to believe that he got 80 million votes just because he wasn't the other guy? No, absolutely not. Impossible. not possible that that happened. So how did he get 80 million votes? Obama got 72 million votes, right? Is that right? 72, 70, whatever. Close enough. You're going to tell me that Joe Biden did 15% better than Barack Obama when Obama was, when Obama came to town, it was like the Rolling Stones came to town. I know, because when I was living in Las Vegas, when he was campaigning, and I remember coming to a stoplight, and all these police on motorcycles came flying out of nowhere and got off and literally stopped traffic so that when the light turned green, none of us were going. And this huge motorcade came by. It was just almost endless. And it was Obama. It was Obama out to go to the Silver Bowl in Las Vegas, which is where UNLV plays. And the place was packed, like the fucking Rolling Stones were there. There was so much excitement and enthusiasm for Barack Obama when he was first running. I mean, and then he became president and bombed the shit out of the Middle East to the point where he ran out of bombs. But let's put that to the side. Let's talk about just the election component of it. People were interested in what he had to say. And you're going to tell me that Joe Biden did 10 to 15% better than him? You'll never, ever be able to convince me of that. Because I have a functioning brain and I have eyeballs as well. And it does not pass the eyeball test. When you look out there and you see 12 people that are at Joe Biden's rally and they all look like they were looking for Chick-fil-A and they made a wrong turn or they're asking for directions somewhere else. They're not enthusiastic. They're not waving flags. And the Trump people, I mean, look, credit to them. They're enthusiastic, but like their enthusiasm is insane, you know, like mile long caravans. The Democrats stole it. They stole this election. They stole it through the voting system. They stole it everywhere, every way that they could. Because they are so desperate that they couldn't stand losing. And so I hope that when the dust settles and the investigations happen, if they actually happen, that the people that are held responsible for this are taken out in handcuffs. Not because I want Trump to win, but because I want their criminality to be exposed. I'm not trying, and let me be real clear here. I'm not trying to say the Republicans are somehow above stealing elections either. They just didn't need to with this one. They had millions of people there for Trump. I mean, I think he set the record for votes if you take Biden out of this. And there's no way Biden actually got that many votes. So my question is, how many votes did they steal? I mean, at least 10 million, because there's no way he got more than Obama. At least 10 million. I'd say probably more like 30 million. Because I don't see Biden appealing to more than 50 million Americans. I just really don't. I don't know. I could be wrong on that one. But the problem is we're forced to speculate about it because they cheated too hard. If they had made it so that Biden just barely beat Trump, that'd be one thing, you know. But to say that he got like 8 million more votes or 7 million more votes than Donald Trump, it was like, guys, you kind of went overboard on this one. So we'll see how it all shakes out in the end. But but my feeling is, you know, that the left had to steal it. They had the motive and the opportunity, and also they have the disposition for stuff like that. They're not righteous in a true sense. They're dictators in you know, they're wolves in sheep's clothing. The left, the tolerant left. If you get on the wrong side of them, they want you to die. Fuck them. Fuck the left. You know, they're insane. They've gone totally insane. And I used to consider myself to be on the left. I honestly did. I thought they were more compassionate. I thought they looked out for the you know, the weaker in the community. They don't do any of those things. That's all bullshit. That's all propaganda. And I fell for that, you know, in high school and college and whatever. I thought, well, the left is way more tolerant. They're not. They're not. They're just better at disguising it. Although the mask has slipped lately. Okay, next question. What is the real what is the purpose of the masks is the question. And so I figure let's talk about the real purpose of the mask. Well, we know what it isn't. It isn't about science. And we know that for a couple of reasons. One, because the Surgeon General came out in March and said, don't wear masks. Masks don't work. It's strictly symbolic, or it helps to set your mind at ease, but it doesn't actually do any. I forget the exact wording of it, but it was a, you know, they put out a statement saying that the box that the N95 mask come in. Not all of them, but some of the boxes that they come in. On the side, there's a label that says this does not prevent the spread or transmission of coronavirus. So, okay. And then we've got the bandanas. Oh, the bandanas. The bandanas around your face that is going to prevent you from spreading a virus. Oh, the idiocracy of it all is just so in your face. Look, it's not about science. It's about compliance. It's not about actually stopping you from spreading the disease or anything like that. It's about symbology. It's about making you wear the mask. It's about making you do something that you don't want to do. Well, they actually, I should say, they've convinced probably half the people wearing masks that it's their idea, which is really devious, because now they're all mask Nazis policing each other, which is fucking retarded, but whatever. You've got to be, I mean, look, I laugh. I still kind of laugh at the insanity of the masks. But the problem is that it is being normalized. It's being normalized through, well, it's first and foremost, it's being normalized because you see everybody wearing them. So that becomes a normalization component of it too. But it's normalized in commercials. You notice how everyone's wearing masks now in commercials? That's not accidental. That's by design. This is social engineering. They are engineering you to believe that there is a deadly virus that is going to kill you. Now, if you get off of that line of thinking and ask any sort of questions, you're a heretic. You have to wear this mask because there's a deadly virus that's going to kill you. I have a question. It says on the side of the box that it doesn't help you with the virus that's going around. How dare you? How dare you inject logic into this conversation? You're an anti-masker. You're anti-science. You want grandma to die. You have to wear the mask because grandma will die if you don't wear the mask. Is it okay if I wear this bandana? That's fine. Wear the bandana. Oh, because it's about science, right? Wear the bandana because it's about science. You know, the science that, you know, when you go get your, when you go have a heart transplant and the doctors are all in there in the ER wearing their bandanas. You remember that? So it's clearly not about science. Because if it was about science, they would tell you to take that dirty ass napkin off your face because it's not working, right? But it's not about that. That's why they want you to wear the bandana too. They want you covering your face. What next? A burqa? I mean, you see this slippery slope? It does two things. The mask wearing. It identifies who is compliant, who is willing to go along with every insane government dictate and mandate out there without any sort of critical thought, without any sort of examination. It brands those people as compliant, obedient people. sheeple people that have done absolutely no research into the actual safety or the science behind masking. Those people will do anything you tell them to do. And it simultaneously outs people that don't fall for the bullshit as being difficult. The people that will not go along with the plan. The people that are engaged in critical thinking. The people that say, this is all theater. And I'm not interested in being an actor in your shitty play. So I'm not participating and you can all fuck right off. So it is a symbol of the pandemic. It's a symbol of it. It's the flag of it. Wear your mask. Get out there on your balcony and clap. Clap for NHS. Clap, you dumb bastards, like Joe Biden said, right? Clap. Clap, you dumb bastards. Clap for those healthcare workers. They're brave soldiers, don't you know? They're on the front lines fighting against this virus. If it wasn't for them, you might die from a virus with a 99.9% survival rate and a median age of death of 80. Clap. Clap like the fucking trained SEALs that you are. Government will throw you a fish. It's an embarrassment, man. And people need to check themselves, because going around being a mask Nazi and telling other people, getting real comfortable, getting in other people's business, telling them what to do, dude, be very careful doing that to people, lest you want a broken jaw from somebody. I'm not kidding. It's a really bad precedent to set. Strangers coming up to you and yelling at you and telling you what to do. That's a good way to get your ass kicked by somebody that, you know, is not willing to listen. I'm not advocating violence. I'm just saying, don't expect, if you get your teeth knocked out, if you go up to a perfect stranger and tell them what to do and tell them to put a mask on and start yelling at them about how they're going to kill everybody if they don't do it, you might get your teeth knocked out and you might have it coming to you. So just be prepared for something like that. Okay, next question. How would a social credit score work, and how would it impact the junk food industry if your score goes down by eating unhealthy food? This is a really, really interesting question. Okay, we've talked about on previous episodes about the social credit system that has been unrolled in Shenzhen, China. It is alarming and dystopian and, by the way, headed our direction. Now, this social credit system is, the way they have it set up in China is that they have facial recognition cameras everywhere. Millions and millions of them. I'm not talking about the CCTVs. I'm talking about specific facial recognition cameras that are different than the normal ones. And they're tied into these massive database that the Chinese government has for the program that they're running in Shenzhen, which apparently is a test market, but it'll be rolled out nationwide. And then if they have their way, worldwide. Your facial identification is in the system, connected to who you are because of your national ID. That is tied to a Weibo account, which is like a PayPal account, which is mostly in China. They do a lot of work with QR codes. So if you want to buy something, you scan the QR code and you can buy it that way. Money gets deducted out of your Weibo account, which is like a PayPal account, which you have a balance in, and you buy things that way. That's kind of how it's done in China. So that account with your money is tied to your profile, your facial recognition, your who you are, and your cell phone number. So the example that we've used in the past is guy smoking a cigarette gets on a bus where you're not allowed to smoke on the bus. Facial recognition camera picks up that he's smoking, figures out who he is. By the time he gets off the bus, walking down the street after he gets off on his stop, his cell phone gets a ping saying you have been you've been found to be smoking on a bus when you're not supposed to. The fine is 20 dollars, 20 yuan, whatever, it has been deducted from your account. You've been fined and your social credit score has gone down a point. That is all happening currently. And the question is, how would that impact the junk food industry? So this is kind of an advanced question, because all of this information, the Internet of Things, that's part of this fourth industrial revolution where all of your devices are talking to one another. Your refrigerator is going to be talking to the network as well. And you can foresee a future in which the food that you're buying at the store that will all be paid for with digital currency will be categorized. That food then goes to your refrigerator, where the list from the grocery store, the digital list from the grocery store that you paid for, will be fed to your refrigerator so that it knows what's in there. It might even have a camera in it. In fact, it will have a camera in the refrigerator so that it can see everything that's in there. If you're buying 12 packs of Cokes and Ding Dongs and Twinkies and eating all this junk food all day long, it is reasonable in this future scenario for your health insurance provider to have a problem with that. To say, you know, we've reevaluated your policy. We've reevaluated your life insurance policy, might have something to say about that too. All of a sudden your premiums go up because you're not taking good care of yourself. The fact that you would no longer have any privacy about the foods that you eat and your refrigerator literally spying on you and giving that information, feeding that information into a big AI-driven database, which is creating a digital profile of you, a voodoo doll of you, a digital voodoo doll of you, an avatar. And you are this person, you live at this address. These are the types of foods that you buy all the time. You buy them on the regular, and your body mass index is too high. Therefore, we have docked you. We've lowered your social credit score because you're getting kind of fat. And your policy on your life insurance went up, and your healthcare policy just doubled over the last month because all that information was finally processed and they realized that you are a high category risk. This is coming. Now, how that works with the junk food industry remains to be seen, actually, because these big multinational conglomerates like Nabisco, you know, all these companies that make a lot of the food, it's controlled by very few corporations, Pepsi, Coke, you know, Kraft. There's very few of them. They're multiple brands. But they're going to have to deal with this new reality where their foods are deemed as, harmful, or maybe not. I can envision a future in which they get an exemption because it's really not about keeping people healthy. It's about keeping people unhealthy. And therefore, because these people are buying junk food, maybe their credit score doesn't go down. Maybe keeping them fat and dumb and unhealthy is the goal. Your policies will go up, though. That will definitely go up. No doubt about it, because that's just a math equation. You know, if these health insurance providers could see what you do in your free time all the time, they would like that. They would prefer more information on you so that they could evaluate you and keep your policy, you know, priced accordingly. So I can envision a scenario where with all of your appliances spying on you, they'll know exactly where you are on the internet. They'll know exactly how much water you use for your showers. And that could be just turned off at some point. Ask Garcetti in LA what he plans to do with people that are having, you know, too many people at their house. He said he'd turn the water off
first of all, you can't do that. That is illegal for them to do that to you, but whatever. The future with the social credit system and how that ties in to your personal shopping habits is going to be fascinating and no doubt draconian. Think about, we're already starting to see the first signs of this. Amazon Alexa's in your house, and the ability, you know, setting up reorder cycles on your purchases in Amazon, so they, you know, they're just coming to you consistently every month or every 2 weeks or however you have it set up. They're already, and Amazon has said they just announced that they're getting into the pharmaceutical industry. What could possibly go wrong there, right? So with all of this information about you, you creating this footprint or this avatar, or this voodoo doll of yourself, they're going to know exactly who you are, what you eat, what you think, where you go, what you watch, all of that stuff. And if you're listening to shows like this, or you're watching, you know, David Icke videos, or, you know, you're into InfoWars or whatever, you're going to be penalized for that. That's definitely coming in the future. And I'm not excited. I'm not excited to participate in that. And that kind of leads into the next question, which is, are they going to make the coronavirus vaccine mandatory? Well, I don't think they have to. I don't think they have to make it mandatory, because they're going to make it so that your life is so complicated without it that it might as well be mandatory. And this gets into that last question that we were just talking about, which is the, when your social credit score is tied to your behavior, it's a form of behavior modification. So the coronavirus vaccine, do they make it mandatory? Well, they could. And that would scare off a lot of people, because it, you know, why make it mandatory? I mean, they'll come up with they would theoretically come up with the lies of why, you know, this is beyond personal freedoms. Like, we have to do this for the greater good and herd immunity and all those jerk off terms that they use that don't mean what you think they mean. They could make it mandatory if they wanted to, but I think there'd be massive pushback from that. Instead, we already see sort of the soft push, which is they're not going to make it mandatory. They're just going to make your life incredibly difficult if you don't do it. They might make it so that your employer has the right to mandate it at your work. You know, if you don't have the vaccine, you can't go to work here. Now, there will be lawsuits for that, massive ones for sure. But it still won't change the fact that your boss will tell you you're not coming into work unless you get this vaccine, and you're going to either be fired or you're going to be compliant. So, making it difficult for you or impossible for you to travel on a plane, oh, that's most definitely coming. And Qantas, CEO of Qantas, talked about that. He said that he was going to make all international inbound flights that they have to have the vaccine records. Well, eat it, dude. There's other airlines that go to Australia, by the way. You don't have to fly Qantas to get there. It could very well be it turn out that it's a get woke, go broke sort of thing, which I definitely hope it is. I'll never fly Qantas again. Not that I really fly it all that often. I mean, I have been on it a couple times, but no need for me to ever do that. Not interested, not participating in that. So you don't need to make the vaccine mandatory. You just need to make everybody's life so difficult to operate without it that they go and get it. But I ask you, why the push? Why this massive, a government that doesn't give a flying fuck about you now all of a sudden is so concerned that they have to get you injected with an experimental vaccine immediately, and there can be nobody that you know, that doesn't participate in this. Everybody has to get it. What is that about? Well, I think we all know what it's about. It's not about actual medical science. It's not about health. It's not about taking care of you. It's about injecting you with God knows what to keep you under their spell. Who's in charge of it? Bill Gates. The end. The end of the conversation, really. That's all you need to know. Who is funding this insanity? Bill Gates, you know, the guy with the eugenics background. The guy that went on a TED talk and talked about doing a good job with his vaccination programs that'll lower the global population by 15%, which means taking a billion people and killing them or removing them. That guy gives a shit about your health. He wants you to be vaccinated. He wants you to take care of yourself because he loves you. If you're falling for this, which nobody listening to this show is even remotely falling for this, but those people out there that are, how dense do you have to be? So they're not going to make the shot mandatory, though they would love to do that. They're going to be strategic about it. They understand that there will be more pushback that way. So they'll do it. They'll go about the end around route where they say, we're not going to make it mandatory. You have freedom of choice. You have the freedom to do what you want to do. We would never mandate getting a vaccine for you. If it is not something that you want, you are free to opt out. You'll never get on an airplane again. And you might never be able to get your internet ID card and get online again and conduct banking or internet or email with your friends or searches or see pictures of your grandkids or any of that stuff. That'll all be off limits to you. That'll only be for the people that comply and have the internet ID card that allows them to do all those things. And in order to get the internet ID card, well, you have to be fully up to date on your vaccinations. It has to be registered in the data in the CDC's vaccine database system. And if you're not, well, then you don't get your internet ID card. So, and all those things don't apply to you. You're essentially locked out of the system. That's how they'll do it. They're already working on that. That's already happening. So we don't have to speculate too much about that. But a mandate, a fort, you have to have the vaccine or you can't, you know, or we'll arrest you. That's not going to happen. That's the wrong way to do it. And they know that. I actually wish they would do that, though. I wish they would try that because that is a path to to changing that. Is if they go and mandate it, because then people, you know, a fair segment of the population will be up in arms and will be like, there is no fucking way we're participating in this and we will burn this place to the ground. That is the reaction you kind of want. But if they do it in the softer way, it'll be more effective for them. It'll be harder for us to break free. But look, man, I'm not above getting into the fake ID vaccine ID business, you know, making those fake cards and selling them, you know, like people make fake IDs in college, because people are not going to want to participate. And the rush to get everybody injected all at once, talking about the National Guard being involved in deploying these shots, well, there's a clear reason for that. They don't want the word to get out on the sorts of side effects. And in order to get ahead of the curve, they want to get everyone, you know, inject everyone all at once. Once again, they're not going to make it mandatory. They're just going to make it extremely, they're going to say the National Guard is here to help you. We're not going door to door to forcibly hold you down. We're going door to door to make things easier for you. Clap for your healthcare workers. Clap for your National Guard. Families traveling with small children or need assistance boarding the airplane may board first, along with active duty military, National Guard members, and our heroes on the front lines, doctors and nurses. You may now board the aircraft. And don't even think about getting on this aircraft unless you have your up-to-date vaccination records that will be stored on your phone. And you will be required to provide before you even purchase your airline ticket. Maybe even before you cross state lines. Who knows? it's insanity dressed up as politeness and hurt, you know, looking out for the herd, the greater good, the social contract, you know, all that horse shit that they try to sell you. I didn't sign a social contract. I'm not responsible for you. I'm not responsible for your well-being or your health. Sorry if that sound, it makes me sound like an asshole, but I refuse to take medical advice from some moron who's shouting out the window of their car, who's 80 pounds overweight and just this year decided that they're going to become health conscious, that they're concerned about you not wearing a mask or you not taking the vaccine. They're all of a sudden health experts on vaccinations. 100 pounds overweight, a ninth grade education, but you're going to lecture me on vaccines. Go fuck yourself. How dare you? So there's going to be a segment of the population that will push back against this insanity, rightfully so. And there's going to be a segment of the population that is going to push this insanity because they think that they have it. They think that, you know, that the science is settled because they watched CNN last night. And Wolf Blitzer told them that the science is settled. So it's settled. And all of you anti-vaxxers out there, you just want to kill grandma. Never mind the fact that the vaccine industry has spent $4.2 billion to settle claims against them through the VAERS court, the rigged joke, the kangaroo court that is the VAERS court. And still they've spent $4.2 billion, not of their own money, mind you, not of their own money, not Big Pharma's money. They spent $4.2 billion of our money because the money that funds the VAERS court that goes into that slush fund that gets paid out is collected from 75 cents on every vaccine that is purchased by consumers. So you're not even sticking it to Big Pharma when you win in the VAERS court. That money comes from money that was paid out by everybody else and set aside in this fund because after 1986, they can't sue you in the United States because Big Pharma got themselves some dirty politicians and made it that way that you can't sue them. But even through all of that, even after not being able to sue for product liability and having being forced to navigate the kangaroo VAERS court, they've still paid out more money than the Catholic Church has paid to settle rape allegations and claims. That's what kind of a problem it is. But you're going to tell me that you want us to take a vaccine, an RNA vaccine that's been rushed to market, has never been tested on human beings, has never had any long-term studies done. This is going to prevent a virus with a 99.9% survival rate and a median death age of 80 years old. I would say that the vaccine would possibly lower your IQ, but if you're taking the vaccine, I'm not quite sure how much lower your IQ could go. If you look at all those statistics and you still say, yep, I want to be first in line to get the vaccine, then go for it. Have fun. But I don't want to hear any complaints. I just don't. I'm not interested in them. Let's see. Okay. Last question here. Why the insane lockdowns in Democrat-controlled states / counties, but not in Republican ones? Oh, well, that's easy. Because the Democrats are trying to destroy the country. The Republicans have their own version of what they want to do to the country, but the Democrats are actively engaged in trying to destroy the country. It's the only explanation for their behavior. Well, that and the fact that the governors have clearly been promised something by the Biden administration. Governor Newsom, Lori Lightfoot, Beetlejuice, Whitmer. These people are cartoon characters. I mean, you couldn't conceive. Patrick Bateman from American Psycho is, if that's not Gavin Newsom, I mean, or maybe Scott Disick, I don't know, one of the two. this is insane, right? So they've clearly been promised something. We had what happened in Oregon with the insane looting and rioting that was going on, and everyone, it's a peaceful protest, everybody. Okay, you have the Chaz / Chop situation they had in Seattle during the summer. Democrat controlled. You have what was going on in Washington, in Wisconsin. You have Whitmer, and you have Pennsylvania. Look, I'm not on the red team and I'm not on the blue team, but it's pretty fucking obvious where the problems are. And the problems are all in these blue states. It's a fact. I'm sorry. I'm just being objective and looking at the analysis of it. That's where it's happening. And I believe that it is part of the plan. I believe that the left is fully invested in this great reset that the World Economic Forum is pushing. I think that some on the right are on board with it as well. But those on the left are fully engaged in this. Through years of Soros-backed operations, through years of their globalist ties to, the United Nations, and their radicalized thought process, which is, you know, straight out of like the Saul Alinsky rules for radical playbook. I think that the Democratic side of the political establishment wants to sprint into the Great Reset. And in order to have the Great Reset, you must destroy the current system in order to build back better. Remember? Build back better, Biden's little term, the term he got from the World Economic Forum that uses that exact same phrase, build back better. Well, in order to build back, you have to destroy what's currently there. What did you see in Wisconsin? What did you see in Seattle, in Portland? What have you been seeing in San Francisco, where you can literally take a dump on the sidewalk and nobody will arrest you? You just have to kick the heroin needles out of the way first, right? But God forbid you open your restaurant, because they'll send the SWAT team there. It's planned. It's a planned destruction of the country. You can't build back better until you destroy what is currently here. And what have we seen during 2020? Destruction. And where have we seen it? We have seen it in democratically controlled states and cities. The right has their problems, believe me. There's some unhinged religious zealots there that have ideas for this country that I am not on board with either. But let's prioritize where our anger and frustration and contentment should flow towards, and it is towards those on the left. They are the kids that lost and then took their ball and went home and didn't want to play anymore. And with this election, like we answered in the first question, I feel like they stole it. I feel like they're trying to steal it, in the process of stealing it, because they can't get the votes organically, because nobody wants to participate with this insanity that they're pushing, that's dressed up as politeness and social consciousness and fairness and environmental responsibility. It's all garbage. They don't know what they're... Engage one of these leftists. Ask them, drill down with them on a conversation about what they actually believe. They don't know what they believe. They believe Donald Trump is the devil, or Hitler, more accurately. They don't have a problem voting for a guy that's a pedophile. They don't have a problem voting for a vice presidential candidate that is spent a disproportionate amount of her time trying to lock up other black people. on petty bullshit crimes. They don't have a problem with that. That is not a deal killer for them when it comes to voting. Yes, Donald Trump is Adolf Hitler in their eyes, and Mike Pence is probably a serial killer. It's a fair guess. He might be. He might be a robot too. I don't know. But those on the left have come completely unhinged, and these lockdowns and the rioting that they turn a blind eye to, the hypocrisy and in the mask mandates, where this restaurant is closed, they've got outside dining, we've shut down their outside dining. You've all seen the video of the lady pointing to the movie filming that was happening literally across the street from her outside dining that had been approved by LA City. They said, well, that's fine, you can have all that outside dining for the staff that's filming this movie, but you can't have it open for all of this. These are all happening in democratically controlled cities, unfortunately. Well, I shouldn't say all. I think most of them are happening. There might be some examples of Republican-controlled cities where some of this is happening, but it is disproportionately happening in the left-controlled cities. Why is that? Because they are on board with the Build Back Better concept, and in order to build back better, you have to destroy what is currently there. That's what they're planning to do. That's what they're that's what they're tactically doing right now. That's where the hypocrisy of the lockdowns and the questioning of this facility can stay open, but this one can't. This Walmart can be open because it's a big box and the virus doesn't go in there, but small lumber store can't be open. People see it. People are rising up. People are pissed off, and they should be. They should be really pissed off. But then the politics kicks in, and they've got the people on the left convinced that all the people that are protesting against the mask things and against the closing and the shutdowns, those are all Trump supporters. They're not. They're human beings that may or may not be Trump supporters. They're people that are pissed off. So I think it was. You know, I think it's done by design. And I realize now, after going through all these questions and wrapping up this episode, that I might have just stolen James Corbett's questions for Corbett. And I really didn't mean to do that. But James has told me that he doesn't mind if we use his work as long as we cite it and that it's open source everything. So I didn't mean to steal James Corbett's questions for Corbett, though I recognize that I always liked that segment. So maybe in the back of my mind, I thought I was going to do it. I'm no James Corbett. Let's be clear. He's a fucking legend. He's on the Mount Rushmore of the alternative community, and he's a good dude. But I will leave that there. So listen, guys, I appreciate you checking out the show. Like I said, it's been a phenomenal ride so far. Coming to, you know, the tail end of 2020, this show started in March of 2020, ironically. Well, it actually started in January. I was recording episodes there, but it finally hit the air in March, right around the times of the lockdown. So if you like this episode, if you like the show, share it. It's important. It's the way things get done. You can rate it and review it, only if you like it. Don't give me a 1-star, please. Don't be a dick. And get the word out. You can follow me on Twitter at Macroaggressions. You can follow me on Facebook for, you know, we'll see. Facebook.com/ The Octopus of Global Control. And if you have questions for me, I'll probably compile another list of these and poach off of Corbett once again. And if you want to send me questions, you can do so at theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thanks, everybody. Take care.